Investing Simplified is brought to you by Chuck Price, President and Wealth Manager of Price Financial Group Wealth Management Incorporated, a registered investment advisor firm and author of Investing Simplified, the book. Individual situations will vary, and the information on this show should only be relied upon when coordinated with individual professional advice. Other parties present on this broadcast are not affiliated with Price Financial Group Wealth Management Incorporated. Investing Simplified is the longest-running live financial show in America, with a financial advisor, an estate planning attorney, and a CPA to answer your questions for free, and is broadcast live from Portland, Oregon on affiliated stations throughout the Pacific Northwest. Chuck can be contacted by visiting www.pfgwm.com. You can email Chuck with a question at askchuck@pfgwm.com. Or you can call him right now at 503-417-9595. That's 503-417-9595. Or for our long distance and podcast listeners, you can call toll free at 877-733-1011. That's 877-733-1011. Now, here's the host of Investing Simplified, Chuck Price.
Welcome to Investing Simplified. And if you're really, really, really planning on hearing from Chuck today, I'm afraid you're out of luck. This is Carl Jepson in the studio today. Chuck is off with a much-needed rest. And in the studio today with me is Kevin Stege of the Baker Colson CPA firm.
Hi, good morning, Carl.
Good morning. Good morning. Well, we have, I'm sure, lots of questions out there that people are wanting to ask, and I'm going to give my encouragement or exhortation to you all that it is much easier for us to answer the questions now than it is at 3 minutes before the show ends. So the phone numbers again are 503-417-9595 and 877-733-1011. And one of the things we have right off the bat, I understand that we got an inquiry for our station here that it was a little out of the range for me, but I know a little bit, enough to be dangerous, so I'm going to tell you about it. The question was, have you had any advice for a new landlord here in Portland? And I do have advice for besides prayer, I have new advice. One is join one of the landlord associations and read everything they give you. It's very important. Secondly, associate yourself with the best landlord lawyer that you can find, and ask them before you do anything like send out notices or sign leases or anything. Make sure you've consulted with your lawyer because the landlord law has changed a lot in the last few years, and it is a minefield for the unwary landlord. And things that defy common sense and normalcy are throughout the code that deals with landlords. So that's my advice. And I know that because the firm that I was with was probably the largest law firm pretty much devoted to landlord-tenant law around. And they really do that well. So that's the Warren Allen firm, by the way. They have a number of lawyers who are experts at landlord law, and I plug them for that because they're excellent. If I had to have a tenant problem, I'd go to them, no question. There are others, but, you know, I like to give you the best.
That's right. So that's related to residential landlord-tenant law, or would that be commercial also?
No, that's residential landlord. Mm-hmm. Commercial landlord is much more cut and dried, and it's less fairness and more what are the rules. So I'd say that, and usually they kind of, I think, presume that in the landlord-tenant situation, the residential situation, that the tenant is somewhat at a disadvantage. Whereas in the commercial setting, they figure that the landlords are business people, and usually the tenants are business people. And so they sort of figure that they kind of know what they're doing. So nonetheless, it's a tricky area, but it's much when it comes to litigation, it's just a little bit more cut and dried.
Yeah. You said the tenants were at a disadvantage in residential, or the landlords at a disadvantage?
No, the tenants at a disadvantage. The tenants at a disadvantage in entering into the agreement. That's why the law is so much more favorable. The law is much more favorable, or at least, I would call it favorable to the tenant.
Nice. Yeah, that's what I
And
thought.
The pendulum swung back. There was a time when landlords could do anything they wanted. You may have seen the movie. That I think it was Joe Pesci was and it was called The Super, and it was like a slumlord in New York City. And it's the pendulum of the law has swung the other way, so that it's more like, you know, social work for the tenant. So it's kind of a whole big different thing now. My landlord lawyers can call and criticize me for that remark if they like, but I think they'd agree mostly.
I hear you. So, well, when I get a new client coming in for tax purposes and they indicate they're interested in getting into real estate, maybe buying a condo or a residential rental of some form, they say, well, where shall I start? And usually what I do is, for tax purposes, we take a look at whether an LLC is appropriate or not. Typically, the tax implications aren't very great for that, but the legal implications of forming an LLC are much more significant, and that's where I usually refer them to get some legal advice. From my perspective, if it were me, I would almost always put a residential rental in an LLC, whether it's a partnership or not, it's a different story, but at least for legal purposes, seems like a good thing.
Well, it is, I think. I don't know about one for every property necessarily, but the advantage of an LLC is that it has the same kind of what they call limited liability, like the name says, that a corporation does. And what that means is that the landlord essentially owns the property. You own the membership interest in the landlord in the LLC, and when you enter into a lease agreement or a rental agreement with a tenant, the LLC is the landlord, and therefore, if something really really bad happens between that tenant and the LLC and the landlord, that is, then and the tenant ends up suing and the tenant ends up winning, and there's a huge judgment for whatever reason, then. And if it goes beyond whatever insurance you have, which you should have, then the only asset that's at risk is the rental property, not your own personal assets that you hold elsewhere. Mm-hmm. So that's the main reason for having an LLC, and it's an important one.
Very good. Yes. Well, I want to add one more little tidbit to this conversation, and this will be a cutting edge for our listeners who are interested in real estate. And it's related to the 2018 new tax reform laws. And basically, you've probably heard about this 20% deduction that small businesses get. And the question is, does that also apply to real estate? And the answer is maybe. And why it does is, and I'm not putting my feet in concrete on this, but I want our landlords to consider where they fit in this and to continue to research it with their accountants and how 2018 is going to affect them. But basically, the gist is the 20% deduction obviously is a huge deduction. You want that baby. That's going to be a good thing. It sounds like that the new tax reform law says it applies to any trade or business. Well, what's a trade or business? And that is, it depends on what section of the code you're at for how they define a trade or business. Typically, real estate is considered like a passive activity and for the most part isn't looked as a trade or business, but in this case, it very may well, depending on how your contracts are set up. I don't know how our residential landlords are going to fare, but it appears in the commercial setting, if you're a landlord and you have a triple net lease where the tenant basically does everything, you're probably not in a trade or business according to Code Section 162, if that's the section that's going to apply. But if you are actively managing it, you very may well qualify for the 20% deduction. And I would kind of think the residential landlord may fit under that because most of the time you're the one managing that. Maybe if you hire a management company, now you're not. Anyway, this is something to consider and may be significant for 2018.
That's great news, because there are a lot of landlords and tenants in the area, and it's more and more expensive on both sides of the fence, and they're you know, a lot of things to think about, especially in the tax world. So,
yep.
So I guess I'm a trade, right? We're a trade.
Yep.
Okay, good. That's good. That's always good to know.
Yeah.
My business is smaller than yours, but you know, that's because I'm the only guy there.
Yeah.
Anyway, so for those of you who'd like to jump in on this conversation, whether it's a question that you have that's bothering you, as Chuck likes to say, keeps you up at night, or whether you just have some curiosity, we're here to talk to you. And bear in mind that I'll give our disclaimer, which is that this is not intended to be, personal financial accounting, tax, lawyering advice. It is really our impression of what you told us. And we can't possibly know all of the circumstances, and we can't add you as a client on the radio. But we hope that it adds, some information and some direction to you, so that when you do go and seek out your own professional help, that you can ask the right questions and give them the right information so that they'll be able to guide you properly and either confirm or deny whatever we said. So that's a nice thought. So for the rest of you, you can just enjoy your coffee and, watch a game today. Watch the Titans beat the Patriots. That's my prediction today. So
we heard it here first.
But you got to remember, I'm also was predicting the Buffalo Bills. So,
I mean,
the track record's not so good on the predictions.
Very good.
So, anyway, well, we're going to have a show that is going to be devoted to, if no one calls, to Kevin reading the tax code. And really.
You better call.
You better call. That's right. So anyway, the other thing is Kevin's going to be talking about some of the things in the tax code, some of the deductions and how they work and don't work and how we might not know. And that's the thing I'm sure of, is that we will find all sorts of interesting little things that are going to take some years to shake out before we even know what happened. So anyway, that's the thing. And as far as I'm concerned, I'm going to talk about selecting your trustee, and I'm going to offer you some questions to ask, some attributes to consider if you're thinking of a relative or a friend to be your trustee.
Hmm.
And so that's going to take us a little while, but let's see. Kevin, without further ado, I guess we can repeat our telephone numbers and then go on a break. And our telephone numbers are 503-417-9595 or long distance 877-733-1011. We'll be back in a minute.
Price Financial Group, Wealth Management.
Hello, this is Kevin Stege, shareholder with Baker & Coulson Certified Public Accountants, serving the Portland and Southwest Washington areas for almost 40 years. We are a full-service accounting and consulting firm offering our services to a wide range of business and individual clients. One of the largest expenses to a household or a business is its tax burden. While off-the-shelf tax products can help file simple returns, they can't know your plans for the future and not only provide insight and planning to help you get there, but actually help you along the way. There are just some things that can't be replaced by experience. Whether you are just beginning your working career or have a well-established business with many employees, rely on the professionals at Baker & Coulson to help in an efficient, accurate, and personalized manner. We are located at 2414 Northeast Division in Gresham and can be reached at our website at bakercoulson.com or 503-666-5569. That's bakercoulson.com, 503-666-5569. And remember, at Baker & Coulson, our service is the product our clients remember most.
Do you have a tax question? Here's your opportunity to ask Kevin Stege, CPA and shareholder of the Baker Coulson CPA firm, that tax question that's been keeping you up at night. You can call Kevin 503-417-9595 or toll free at 877-733-1011. Now, here's the CPA with the tax answers, Kevin Stege.
Welcome back to Investing Simplified, and my Pink Panther music is noticeably missing. I guess we've been copyrighted out, but I guess that's my problem, right? So
that squad car that's coming up now,
it's because of that.
Yeah.
All right. Well, I understand we have a caller or
we
two.
We do. We have I'm going to try this. A Castellan or Castellan A? Are you with us?
Al.
Hello.
Yeah.
Do you have a call about the tax question on your mind?
I do. Okay, I'm married, and under the new tax code, I'll just use round numbers. I think to be in the 12% bracket, you're at $77,000. And what I was wondering is, if I want to do I guess it's $24,000 is the new standard deduction for a married couple. And if I wanted to, let's say, do a IRA, an IRA transfer from a traditional IRA to a Roth IRA, and I make $77,000, that puts me in the 12% bracket, can I put $24,000 from my traditional IRA into my Roth IRA and then not have to pay any tax on it? Because that'll bring me at like $100,000+, and then I take off the standard deduction, that puts me back at the $77,000. Does that make sense?
Yeah, I mean, basically, when you do your conversion from your regular to your Roth, it just gets added into your income, and the $77,000 is actually of taxable income, so that's after your standard deduction. So I don't know what your other income is, but basically, I think to answer your question, I think the answer is yes. Basically, if you take all your other income, you add in the amount you're converting, you subtract $24,000 for the standard deduction. If you're at $77,000 or lower, then you would be still in the 12% bracket. You wouldn't hop up into the next bracket.
But let's say, I have $77,000 in taxable income, and I don't think I can do it, but what I'm saying is if I have $101,000, which includes a $24,000 for the from the traditional to the Roth, would I have to pay tax on $101,000 or the $77,000 when I take off the $24,000?
You'd have to pay tax on the $101,000 because we're talking about taxable income, which is after all of your deductions. So if you look at it from a gross income perspective, it's easier. If you have $77,000 of, we'll say, wage income, and then you do a regular to Roth conversion, you've added, we'll say, $24,000 into that. Now your adjusted gross income is $101,000.
Right.
Subtract your $24,000 standard deduction. Now your taxable income is $77,000, and or I was using your numbers. I guess $101,000 minus $24,000 is. Yeah, I guess that's right. Then you would be in the 12% bracket still.
So it does work then that I can get away with, but essentially I can get away with converting my traditional to a Roth as long as I stay under $77,000.
Yes.
I don't have to pay tax on it.
Well, you'll pay tax on it. You'll just pay it at the 12% rate as opposed
right.
to the higher, the next bracket up. Which,
yeah, because that's a huge difference to go from 12 to 24.
Absolutely. That's a lot of our planning revolves around managing the tax brackets and keeping the income pretty close to, you know, not hopping up into the next bracket or just recognizing it in a lower bracket. I mean, that's what most of tax planning is deferring income into a lower bracket year.
Okay. Nope. That answers my question. I really appreciate it.
Excellent. Very good call.
Very good question. Well, Kevin, I think we outweighed our last caller, but
all right.
There are more out there that are just waiting with bated breath to ask that question and get that answer. But that's very interesting. I was interested to hear the calculation because, you know, that's going to catch be a great advantage to a lot of people, especially if they do the planning, like you said. And I think a lot of times people in that income bracket between, you know, that are just, you know, middle class and up, they don't do that kind of tax planning. And I think that that's a great thing to be able to. And I know that the tips that I've gotten from you all folks has always been very, very helpful and well worth it.
Excellent. Very good.
So,
yeah. Well, we do have phone lines open, 503-417-9595. Or if you're out of the area, 877-733-1011. I thought I'd take some time to talk about two issues related to the new tax code. One came from an email we received from a listener, And I will start with that. This is regarding making your charitable gift directly from your IRA, particularly when you have a required minimum distribution. So keep that on the back burner. I understand we have another phone call.
Well, it looks like we might. I'm going to say might.
Oh, okay.
And it does look like we probably do. So, caller, are you on the line? Hello?
Not quite yet. Okay. We'll get them on the line and hear what their question is. But in the meantime, there's been a provision that a lot of people have taken advantage of, and that is making a charitable contribution directly from your IRA. It's called a qualified charitable distribution. And the advantage to doing that is it's typically related around your required minimum distribution when you're over age 70 and a half. The advantage is you don't have to recognize that required distribution in income, and the drawback is you don't get to take it as a charitable deduction. However, there's a benefit to doing that because it keeps your adjusted gross income down, and there's a number of calculations based on your adjusted gross income, such as how much of your Social Security benefits are taxable. Also, the medical deduction, 7.5% for 2018, that's based on your adjusted gross income. So it's always a good thing to do if you're charitably minded. And so our question was, can we continue to do that in 2018? And I'll finish this topic real quick, and then we'll get right to the caller.
We'll be right to him. Yes.
Okay, sounds good. With the in 2018, yes, you can still do it. And not only can you still do it, you should do it. This particular provision is going to explode in 2018 and ongoing, because really the only reason not to do it is, number one, if you don't know about it, and number two, if you're just too lazy to do it, because it's going to be a benefit for many, many, many people and should be done. And here's why. The new standard deduction is, as our previous caller said, $24,000. So you say you have a $10,000 required minimum distribution you need to take out. If you just normally do it, you take out your $10,000, you recognize it in income, and then you, if you contribute it to charity, then you would contribute it to your charity of choice, and you get a deduction on your Schedule A. Well, you've recognized it at income. It's made more of your Social Security taxable. It's brought your AGI up. It's made less of your medical deductible and other such calculations. And then if you're under that $24,000 standard deduction, you're not itemizing anyway, so you got no benefit of the charitable deduction. So you definitely, if you are over 70 and a half, you're required to take minimum distributions from your IRA, and you're charitable-minded, make all of your charitable gifts from your IRA. I know it's an extra step to get your broker to do it, but it's a no-brainer. You should do it.
That's great advice. Say, we have caller Val on the line, and Val, are you with us?
Yes, sir.
You have a question for us.
I have a quick question. My wife and I have always filed with, the last number of years, filed with H&R Block, but the cost is getting kind of high, and I retired from my current job, medical transport, and we're wondering, is filing with TurboTax a decent way of doing it, or would you have another recommendation, since apparently we're supposed to go down to a postcard-type tax form?
You know, that is a very good question. Many tax returns should get simplified. If you're not doing a long-form schedule anymore, which they say 9 out of 10 people will not be doing itemized deductions, which if you have a business, I highly recommend a qualified tax preparer who knows what they're doing in your area of business. If you have,
we have no business right now.
Yes, exactly. Or if you have significant investments, I recommend it. There's other scenarios, but if all you're doing is Social Security, an IRA, a 401k, some interest and dividends from, you know, some brokerage accounts, TurboTax is probably just fine. Although sometimes you get what you pay for. You don't get planning and insight into how to fine tune that. And so for a good good CPA, for something that simple, they should be able to push it out for, I don't know, we have a minimum of about $400. For our tax returns, $400, but you're
That's what we were looking at last year was close to $400.
Yeah, and so
but I had
go ahead.
I did medical transport, so I was basically an independent contractor, and I'm providing the gas, he provides the work.
I see
that situation, but now I'm not doing that. Left that in October, so I will have that income. And we have a lot of charitable deductions, I will say that, and quite a few medical expenses with my wife. But that's basically where we stand.
I see. Well, you know, that's tough. I think you get a lot more insight from a CPA or a tax preparer who knows what they're doing. You have people from the one end of the preparer spectrum that basically just take your numbers and put them on a form. Well, you can do that fairly good with TurboTax. The other end of the spectrum is you have people that are looking at your whole scenario that know where you're wanting to go, what you're trying to do. In some cases, nothing changes year after year, and it's not a big deal. But when you do have a transition year or significant other types of tax income or deductions, I think a CPA or a preparer can be very beneficial.
Okay, the next question is just find one that was not as expensive as H&R.
I'm sorry, say that again?
The problem is finding someone who's not as expensive as H&R Block.
Oh, yes, that's true. Yeah. But, you know, TurboTax, I don't know what they're charging. I think I saw in Costco, you're looking at $75 or something, maybe. I don't know what the new one's going to be if it's simplified, so who knows.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Well, I do appreciate your input.
Absolutely. Thank you for
you
calling.
Thank you very much.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Bye-bye.
Well, we have a short time to the next break, so we have a caller about a quitclaim deed. Jim.
Yeah, a house is free and clear if you quitclaim a home in Oregon to someone for $0, do you need to do anything on either one's taxes for that year or fill any forms out?
Is this someone other than your spouse, I take it?
Yes.
If you do that, you are going to be giving them a gift, right?
Yes.
And my CPA just said yes. And the problem with doing that, it's a great thing if it works, if your estate is big enough and you're trying to reduce your estate, or if you're just being nice. You have to remember that person is going to take that house at your basis, meaning that when he or she sells it, they're going to have probably maybe some capital gains, depending on how much it's worth and all that stuff. If you wait until you die and give it to them through the, you know, will or trust process, then it gets a stepped up basis so that at the date that you pass away, they get the house and it's taken at date of death value, so that if they sold it the next day, there'd virtually be no capital gains.
But is there any forms you have to fill out or not?
You should do a gift tax return. I don't think that's a big deal, is it?
Not too bad. It's 709, basically, is name, address, social security number of all the parties, and the value of the gift, and a calculation of how much it reduces your federal estate exclusion.
Who fills that out?
The giftor, you do. Yeah, the recipient doesn't have to do anything.
Okay, thank you very much.
Absolutely.
Great call.
Yes.
Okay, we are going to take a quick break. Apologies to those of you who are waiting so patiently. We'll be back in a minute with Investing Simplified.
Price Financial Group, Wealth Management.
Hello, my name is Carl Jepson, estate planning attorney and co-host of the long-running radio talk show, Investing Simplified. My law practice emphasizes estate planning and probate. My mission statement is practical estate planning for peace of mind. This means that I listen carefully to my clients. I explain the various estate planning techniques and documents in the most understandable terms that I can. I try to make sure that my clients are comfortable with what we are doing together before proceeding, and I discuss my fees up front so that clients don't get any unwanted surprise. Estate planning and probate don't have to be that complicated. My experienced staff and I work closely with our clients to guide them through both of these matters in the simplest and most efficient manner possible. My office is located in the White Office Building at 555 Southeast 99th Avenue, Suite 101, right across the street from Mall 205. My telephone number is 971-229-0585, and my website is carljepsonlaw.com.
Got a legal question? Coming up is Carl Jepsen, estate planning attorney, with Carl's Comments. You can call Carl now at 503-417-9595 or toll free at 877-733-1011. Now, here's Carl Jepsen.
Welcome back to Investing Simplified. And we have more callers, which is kind of how our show gets along. And so, Bob, do you have a question for us?
Good morning.
Yes. What's your question today?
Well, I had a couple of things. First of all, am I correct that if a person, regarding the required minimum distribution, if a person has a 401k at work and they were to move, say, half of it into a mutual fund, when it comes time for the required distribution, can they take the full amount from either one, or do they need to take, say, half from each?
Oh, that's a very good question. There are certain accounts that have to be kept separate. For the most part, I know all of your IRAs, you can take it just from one. You can tally up all of your required minimum distributions across the board, and that you can take it just from one. I don't recall off the top of my head if 401ks are tucked into that. I do know that other types of accounts, some of the public service type accounts, are calculated separately.
Specifically, I was referring to a government TSP and moving part of it into a mutual fund.
Gotcha. A government TSP. I would have to look that one up. I don't have that one on the top of my head. I've run into that scenario once a couple years ago. I don't recall the answer, but the good news is there is an answer. I just don't know it.
Okay. I got another one for you. On the new standard deduction, that it sounds great, but unless I'm misunderstanding something here, it doesn't seem as great as it's been purported. The I subscribe to Tax Girl. You're probably familiar with that website and all. And she put out that if the tax law had not been changed, the new standard deduction was going to be $13,000 for a married couple, and the exemptions would go up to $4,150. But since we're losing the $4,150 on each person, it would have been $13,000 plus like $8,300, so $24,000 is better, but we're losing $8,150 in the process. Do you follow me?
Yep.
Do you agree?
I do agree, and we've found that the improved tax brackets and the tax rates make up for almost in every single scenario the dropping of two exemptions. So
okay.
For the most part, has been the case.
Okay, so if you were going to go into the 15% marginal, it would benefit you, but if you were just in the 10% anyway, it would not be all that beneficial. Is that correct then?
Yeah, and it depends on what some people who are itemizing it already, it makes a difference where the line is drawn. But in this scenario, I think you'll see a pretty significant difference. I mean, you're getting an extra $3,000 deduction overall, and you're going to have the improved tax rates and a broader tax brackets in some scenarios. And we found, it'll be a good boost. I think
that's kind of what I found. In our case, we'll get about $3,000 extra. We have tried to keep our taxable into the 10% marginal, so that was. But next year we're going to hit the 12 because of the RMDs, which we're going to have to take. So, thank you very much. I appreciate your help.
Excellent. Very good. Very good call.
Well, we have a very patient caller. Tracy, are you on the line?
Oh, hello.
Hi, Tracy.
Hi.
You have a question about rental property.
Yeah, I actually have three, but they're kind of all related. So what do you want me to do?
Go for it. Just start where you like.
Okay. So the first one is we have three rental properties, and two are paid off. One is not, and the two that are paid off, should those be in LLCs?
Are they both in LLCs, or should they be in LLCs?
Should they be?
Well, you know, you could have one LLC, or you could have two. I think it's just a prudent thing to do, just in case. The main thing you're worried about is something that really, really bad happens on your property, either with respect to the tenant from hell, or the casual visitor who has some kind of premises liability and falls off the roof. Kinds of things that you rarely can even think about happening. And to the extent that they go over insurance that would carry that, then the advantage of the LLC is that then the only liability that you would have would be, or the vulnerability would be, whatever's in the LLC, as opposed to all your other personal assets. So a lot of people like to do, the one LLC per rental, but that gets pretty, I guess, a little expensive if you have a whole bunch of them. But two or three is not so bad. There's about I think it's $100 a year that is your renewal fee with the state of Oregon for an LLC. So you'd have $300 if you did all three.
Okay. And then, let's say we have a property in Arizona that is rented by a management company.
Mm-hmm.
And then, and that one is in an LLC, actually. But my question is, we want to retire in Arizona. So mm-hmm. we were thinking and then rent out the house that we live in now.
Mm-hmm.
That isn't part of the ones I was talking about. But anyways, so we were going to purchase a house in Arizona, and my husband has a company that has clients in Arizona, and we own a rental in Arizona. Could we technically, since we're not ready to make the jump, could we technically do a lease between his business and us, the owner of the new house house, to rent it? So the company could pay for the mortgage, basically. Because we weren't there.
Yes, you can set up, businesses frequently rent, active trader businesses frequently rent their real estate or their office space from related owners. There are issues related to that, making sure it's just structured correctly and set up. Fair market value is probably pretty important to do. But yes, it can be done, absolutely.
And then could you take depreciation off that house?
Yes. Yep.
And so would I talk to you about, on a separate appointment, or?
For tax purposes, yes. It's pretty straightforward once it's set up for doing it for tax purposes. You want to make sure that all the T's are crossed and the I's are dotted, that it's called self-rental, and it depends on what the entity is, the business entity that's renting it. But yes, we could definitely take a look and kind of get you going down the right road on that.
Okay, and then my third question is, this is down the road, but once we rent out a Washington house, we have a house in Washington and one in Oregon, let's say that they're both not in LLCs, but could we set up an LLC to manage those? Like, would that be beneficial or not?
You could do that. You could set up a kind of a management LLC, but I'm not sure that that helps you that much. I think, because for one thing, that won't give you any limited liability for the for the properties.
Something happened.
Yeah.
Okay, got it. All right. That's probably not.
However, don't go too quick.
here's our tax guy.
That is being thrown out there and discussed as a potential way to, as I mentioned earlier on in the show, about getting that 20% deduction for rental property income. You pay an active trader business that you own management fees to manage your own real estate empire, if you will. And facetiously speaking, and so how that's going to play out still needs to be shaken out, but it's worth looking at. You've got enough rentals going on, enough activity, possibly electing to become a real estate professional. I mean, there's a number of things to plan here, and I think you'd want to sit down with somebody and really go over your whole scenario, your whole setup, all of your sources of income and deductions, and I think you could probably set up a pretty tax favorable plan going forward.
And one thing,
One
other, I want to make one little other suggestion to you that you probably haven't thought of yet, but if you decide to do some estate planning, you should really consider doing a living trust, because you own real estate.
That's where I'm confused, because we do have it, but then if I put something in the LLC, then what happens to my kids if my husband and I both perish? Do they not? I think I just need some real good planning.
Well, you probably do, but all I'm saying is the number one thing that strikes me, when you own real estate in several different states, that could expose you to multiple probates in the event of the death of both of you. And so you'd have a probate in all three states, possibly.
That wouldn't be good.
No. But there are ways around that. And like I said, the living trust is one way. Also, the LLC thing can be very helpful in that process, too, because when you have real property in an LLC, it's owned by the LLC. What you own is the membership interest in the LLC, which is personal property, not real property, and that has a lot to do with where it's taxed. And then also, it may have a big effect on estate tax, depending on where you are residing at the time, because they figure that the taxability of the assets that are personal property really go with the state where you live. But there's some other nuances in that, so that's not a guaranteed rule by any means, but it's some things to consider.
Okay. All right. Yeah. Well, I think you guys have given me some great direction. Thank you so much. I really appreciate your help.
Well, we're on every Saturday. You can have more than one shot at it.
Yay. Okay. Thank you.
All righty. Thanks, Tracy. Well, that was a great call. So we should probably take a little break here coming along, and we will be back with Investing Simplified in just a minute.
Price Financial Group, Wealth Management.
Are you concerned about your retirement income? Do you really understand how your Social Security benefits work? Price Financial Group Wealth Management has helped many seniors in Oregon and Washington maximize their Social Security benefits at retirement through using their Social Security seminar on demand. Now you can watch this valuable information in the comfort of your home by just going to www.pfgwm.com and click on the free Social Security kit. If you are serious about your retirement planning, you cannot afford to miss this opportunity. After all, you have invested your hard-earned dollars into Social Security all your working years. So shouldn't you get the maximum return you can get from those dollars? The future can be scary, and without a plan, it can be even scarier, especially when facing the unknown. What you don't know can hurt you. Get your free Social Security kit at pfgwm.com or call 503-253-3000.
What you don't know can hurt you. Get that legal question or that tax question answered now. Call Carl or Kevin now at 503-417-9595 or toll free at 877-733-1011. Now, here's Carl Jepsen and Kevin Stege.
Well, we're back in the studio again, and it's the top of the end of the show, coming up pretty close. So it's almost time for Carl's comments, but I see that we, well, I'll start Carl's comments anyway, because we're trying to get a little bit of that out of there. Well, this is going to be a short one anyway. I want to talk a little bit about, if you're thinking about naming somebody as your trustee, this is a big question for a lot of people when they're doing a living trust, or say personal representative if you're doing just, you know, a will. So as to how to select your trustee. So I've got some questions and some attributes that I want you to consider if you're thinking of a relative to do this. And so, first of all, does the person have a substance abuse problem? That sounds terrible, but let's face it, you know, there's a lot of that stuff around. And if the person is under those circumstances, they may not be able to exercise the best judgment. This is a big one. Do they get along with the beneficiaries? If they don't, it's going to be a mess for them and for the trustee. Does this person have a history of prudent financial management for their own self? If they don't, they may not be the best trustee. Do they have time? Sometimes being a trustee can require a fair amount of time to get things running. And once it's up and going, it's usually not so hard. But the trust administration of a person who died is got a lot of work to it. Does this person have some bookkeeping skills? Because they need to keep records, and they need to do it regularly. Do they have a good leadership personality, or are they a tyrant? I can tell you, and you'll know, you know, is this the know-it-all that never is wrong? It wants to always tell everybody what to do? If that's the guy, that may not be the best person to have as your trustee, even if he or she may be very knowledgeable, but it's going to alienate the beneficiaries, and they're going to make life miserable for everybody, or he is. Does he have the ability to admit his own mistakes? That's kind of the corollary to the last rule. And does he have patience? That's the another thing. So really what you're asking yourself are things about trust. So would you trust this person to house sit for you while you're on vacation? Think about that, you know? There are a lot of people I wouldn't want in my house, you know, for any reason, maybe.
I've never been invited over, come to think of it.
No, not to house sit. Yeah, that's true. Well, you know, Jake wants to see.
Oh, okay.
The other one is kind of like that is, would you want to buy a used car from this person? I don't know. Would you trust them as your joint account holder on your bank account? You know, I mean, you want to be, you know, vulnerable to their creditors and stuff like that? I don't know. Can you really trust this person to always look after the best interests of the beneficiaries? That's the key. That's what a trustee does. They are a fiduciary. They have a duty to put the beneficiary's interest first. And finally, do you trust that person to drive your 1967 Shelby Cobra? Now, that's a trick question, because we all know that only the lawyer drives the Cobra.
Right.
So those are my rules for our considerations for selecting a trustee.
Well, they got to get it from the house to your office safely.
Well, yeah.
So,
yeah, they don't.
I mean, if there's damage along the way, the lawyer's not going to be happy.
No. And, you know, that's that would be very unhappy. So anyway, I think I just talked to our caller off the line, perhaps. I don't know. Oops. Well.
I can throw another tidbit out there from the new tax law. I wanted to get to this last time I was on, if we have time.
I think we do.
May I encroach upon Carl's comments time?
I've used it up as wisely as I know how.
Okay.
There you
okay.
go.
Well, this is, I think this is pretty important for a segment of our listeners. This is regarding employees who get a stipend or some sort of extra compensation or extra payment from their employer to cover expenses on the job expenses, basically. This could be airline pilots. That's a common scenario. Long-haul truck drivers, when you're an employee, a lot of railroad workers, they have to go out on locations for days or weeks on end. And in these scenarios, they get, say they're supposed to make we'll say $50,000, but the employer says, yeah, we know you have a lot of costs related to this, so we're going to give you an extra $10,000, and we want you to just cover those costs. Well, on that employee's tax return, they report $60,000 of taxable income, and then they get to deduct all of their costs. It can be per diem, mileage, lodging, all sorts of good stuff. Well, the 2018 tax reform got rid of the 2% itemized deductions, which includes the unreimbursed employee expenses. So the employer is still the same. They paid you $60,000, they're going to deduct $60,000. The employee now, though, is hurt. They're reporting $60,000, but they're not going to get a benefit of, even if they're itemizing, this section still isn't there to itemize, so they won't get to deduct these expenses. So I want to get this out good and early in 2018 here. Renegotiate your compensation contracts or agreements, because this is pretty significant. If the employer would adopt an accountable plan where you turn in your receipts and they pay those exact ones back to you, it's extra paperwork, but the employer gets the deduction still, and now it's not taxable income to you. So this is a huge thing for a segment of employees who take these deductions, and it's going to, I don't want any surprises for our listeners going to do your 2018 taxes a year from now, and all of a sudden you don't get a $10,000, $15,000 deduction for all these costs that you've spent. So definitely look at it. Maybe you're part of a union and they are already addressing this. Anyway, just a significant consideration.
Well, in my days of working as a manufacturer's representative for GE, I was traveling a lot, and GE paid for all your expenses, but it was it was one of those accountable things where you gave them the slip, and your manager says, "What are you doing with all that money?" You know. So.
Yep. That's the best way to do it, is an accountable plan, and hopefully that's it means more paperwork for the employer, and that's why they sometimes go away from those. So,
Well, anyway, so we have a few minutes left. So tell us how we can get a hold of you, Kevin.
Yes. Well, the professionals at Baker & Coulson are located at 2414 Northeast Division out the east side of Gresham. Our phone number is 503-666-5569. And we're located at baker-coulson.com on the web.
Ooh. Well, I'm located at 555 Southeast 99th Avenue, Suite 101. And that's right across the street, kitty corner to Mall 205, and right behind Elmer's Restaurants. And my telephone number is 971-229-0585. And my website is carljepsonlaw.com. And we're there all the time.
You know, Carl, one of our earlier callers had talked about putting somebody's name on a title of some real property. And, you know, there's so many different implications to, he gave a very specific scenario, which was you were able to answer, but a lot of the implications depend on the type of property, such as if you put somebody's name directly on a bank account, mm-hmm. is that a gift? And my understanding is it's not, unless they take a withdrawal of money.
And who's going to track that? I mean, as a practical matter, you're right. Yeah, I agree with you. It's there's some good reasons to do that sort of thing, mm-hmm. under some circumstances, but it has to be you have to be careful about that. And I have some suggestions on how to do that, how to get the convenience of having somebody be able to pay your bills for you without having the exposure to their creditors. So that's another thought. And so one of the things we'd like to recommend to you is, think about it this week, and when you call in next week, tell us what you're interested in. If you have something that you have that might take a little longer for us to talk about, and you're interested in hearing about it, whether it's the legal matter, whether it's a tax matter or a financial matter, give us a holler and let us know what you'd like to hear, and then we can maybe put together something more than just an off-the-cuff answer for you.
That's right. And we don't want Chuck mad at us for not plugging next week's show.
That's
next
true.
Week, we will have Harry Dent, Doomsday Dent, as he's otherwise known, live on the line for upwards of a half hour, and we'll hear what he has to say about the future of the American economy and investments.
Well, I'm interested to hear what Harry has to say. He's always very entertaining, and I've very intelligent, and I think his information is really great. One of the things I'd be like to know what he's going to be talking about is how does the tax code thing affect the rest of the economy, and what milestones in the economy does he expect to see this year? Well, we're coming right down to the end of the show, and we want to thank you for listening, and we hope you're back next week with Investing Simplified. Have a great weekend.
We do Investing Simplified.
You can listen to past shows of Investing Simplified or sign up for our free newsletter at www.pfgwm.com. This show is brought to you by Price Financial Group Wealth Management Incorporated, a registered investment advisor firm located at 555 Southeast 99th Avenue, Suite 103, Portland, Oregon, 97216, 503-253-3000, or 877-50-PRICE. Investing Simplified is a registered trademark owned by Price Financial Group Wealth Management Incorporated. How often do you have a checkup? Annually? Only when you're not feeling your best? Or are you one who waits until there is an emergency condition? High blood pressure, rapid pulse, or sleepless nights could be the result of your investment portfolio or no estate plan. But there is a specialist ready to offer you a checkup on your financial health.
Hey, Gene, Dr. Price.
Chuck Price, the financial doctor and author of Investing Simplified, is offering you a free financial checkup. Whether you're asking for a second opinion, a complete financial physical, or investment stress test, Chuck Price, the financial doctor, can help diagnose your money ailments and prescribe a prudent path towards healthy investments and peace of mind. Call 503-253-3000 to schedule your financial checkup or on the web at pfgwm.com. That's pfgwm.com. You'll feel better.